You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. I'm halfway through my way too big energy drink as I was up way too late yesterday.
That thing, when you open that energy drink, it scares me. It pops like... That's not healthy. And that's not even a bad one. When you first open that thing, it sounds like a firecracker.
Oh, it's a pop.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how you can drink that stuff. Why not just drink coffee like a man?
See, I will tell you on coffee, I like coffee. Like, but I'm also somebody, energy drinks and coffee, they don't really affect me. I love a good cup of coffee on a cold night.
See,
that's good.
I did have a cup of coffee the other night at like 7.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, what? She's like, it's 7 o'clock. You got to go to bed in like 2 hours. I'm like, yeah.
I'll be fine.
I'll be all right. Like, coffee in the morning hits different than coffee at night. And I can't explain it. Like, it doesn't wake me up like it does in the morning.
And I will tell you, and this is really a big thing. Like, I drink coffee. I get it. You know, the whole thing. I hate the taste of it afterwards.
Really?
I need to desperately brush my teeth. It will bother me the rest of the day.
I think you drink the wrong coffee.
You're probably not wrong,
but I can taste it,
and I hate the flavor. I will tell you, though, driving in this morning, I was close because it's rainy. It's a little cold. And I'm like,
yeah,
it'd probably be nice to have like a large cup of coffee or something like that. And I was just like, no, I'm okay.
I have 2 cups this morning. I'm feeling great.
See, I'm a slow drinker too. Like, I can't burn through like cups of coffee like other people. I'll sip on like one for 2 hours.
Usually, I'm kind of the same way because I have one of those nice insulated cups, and like it just takes too long to cool off, and then all of a sudden it's cool, and you just got to like chug it, or else it'll just get too cool.
Yeah,
like there's
that
happy medium where you have like 30 minutes, and it'll stay that nice temperature, and that's the window, and then you know by that time it's like 7 o'clock, and I'm like, well, I'm still like I'm not tired, but like. I got a whole day ahead of me still. Like, it's only 7 o'clock. Like, so yeah. Then the second one comes in, and even the third one every once in a while.
Even the third one once in a while.
Listen, I'm not. I like the afternoon nap every once in a while, but like,
it's fair.
Sometimes it wrecks the whole day.
No, you're absolutely
right. Did it yesterday, and then I almost forgot the Sabres played.
And speaking of the Sabres,
speaking of those Buffalo Sabres,
good for them.
Big win.
No, and it is a big win. 5-1 over Ottawa. They were great on the power play as well. What, 2 for 3 or 2 for 4?
2 for 4. I don't know. I gotta check
that now.
They scored two power play goals in one night.
What happened? Where'd that come from? That's great. Jason Zucker, awesome on the power play. Incredibly good.
They never take
him off the power play.
They look good against a division rival, a team that is sort of in the same spot as you are. And you know what, though? This is, I think, going to be a frustrating season for Sabres fans, and I don't mean the sense of, like, they're going to be bottom of the league, which they had the potential to be last night if they lost in regulation and San Jose won. I didn't even check if San Jose won or not. They did, actually. So there was a chance if they lost yesterday in regulation, they would have been bottom of the league. But they're keeping themselves around. Where I'm saying they're going to be a frustrating team, and I'm happy to be proven wrong at some point, is I think now they're just going to be an average team in the NHL. They're going to be able to go on these win streaks. We've already seen it. They won 3 in a row last week. And then they're also going to go on some of these stinkers. And I'm really glad Lindy Ruff is tinkering with the lineup. And we're going to listen to a clip he had in the postgame coming up here later on in the show. But I like that he's aggressive.
Yeah.
It is a complete 180 from what we heard for 2 seasons with Don Granato, where Paul's brought it up a lot.
Let him grow. Let him get chemistry. Let him just gel together. No. If it's clearly not working.
We're moving.
Like, there was a clear problem with Dylan Cousins. Right? Yeah. It was not working. And I'm not saying it is now, but him reunited with Peterka and Quinn, like he has been at times over the past few games, because it's not like... That's the one thing that a lot of coaches do now, and Lindy Ruff had kind of started doing right away back when he was with his first stint with the Sabres, was juggling lines throughout the game. And Cousins, I can't remember if he started with Quinn and Paterka last night, but he definitely played some meaningful minutes with the two of them throughout the night. And he started with them on Saturday in Detroit, and he looked okay. Like, he's looked good with the two of them like they did a couple seasons ago. Quinn is still, I think, a little bit of the problem. Just because of the fact of his speed is not there.
His skating is a problem.
Yeah. And it's, and it's,
he doesn't trust himself.
Yeah.
You can see he does not trust himself.
Right.
He's not shooting like he used to. He's indecisive a lot of the time.
And I think that's a thing with time, but I think it's also the fact that those two injuries he had came so close back to back, even though it was almost a year apart, in terms of being on the ice and playing, he hurt himself in the offseason and then comes back and 16, 17 games in, re-injures the same injury. That's got to do a lot to your mental game of like, you know, man, what am I doing? Did I do something wrong? Is there something wrong with me? Like, and then that plays into now.
And a lot of us do forget about it, how grueling the recovery process can be.
Especially for an ankle injury in hockey.
Yep, and a young athlete as well. It's not like he was 28. You know, I've been there, done that. He's still, when he had the first injury, he was still trying to make his mark in the league.
Right now he's 23, so that's 2 years ago. So you're talking about a 21-year-old having his first big season in the league, and then in that offseason he gets injured and he misses the next potential jump.
Because we saw
that jump from Paterka, last year, and you got to wonder, could Quinn have had that had he not been hurt?
His shot is so good.
Oh my, yeah.
Watching Paterka play
is so good.
He's been quiet a little bit leading into last night's game.
But he had two goals last night and an assist.
Yep, 3-point game, and his shot is spectacular.
Yeah.
He is so much fun to watch. I will say, real quick on the power play, Paul had this last night. Over the last five games, the Sabres are 5-for-17 on the power play. It's 29.4%. That's sixth in the league during that time period.
That's good.
That's very, very good.
And if that can continue, if that trend can continue, you're going to forget all about the first five, six games that there was no power play goals in 23 attempts.
They look active. You're getting different. Now you are getting different guys scoring on the power play.
I mean, look at Paterka's.
Before it was just Zucker.
Look at Paterka's second goal last night. That was a beautiful feed from Thompson, great setup, and a great screen from Jason Zucker. I mean, Zucker was quintessential to all of their power play goals so far this season. He last night assisted Paterka's first one, and then, as I just said, he screened Ullmark. Ullmark couldn't even see Paterka's shot. There was so much right on that power play. And again, it's the Senators, so you do have to wonder, like...
But they are a team with you. I mean, like, that's
right.
That's more my thing, is they're a team around your ability.
But at the same time, you've always handled them. Over the past few seasons, despite how up and down the Sabres have been, they've always handled the Senators. It's always been either a win or a very close game.
Yep.
You never really get blown out by them. And that's been kind of the story for their entire history. That's why there's such a tense rivalry there. They always have either frustrating games or very close games. And even last night, aside from scoring five goals, you had Jordan Greenway and Dennis Gilbert getting under the skin of Brady Tkachuk, which was fantastic. I mean, that took him out of the game essentially for at least 7 minutes of ice time.
And
total.
Let's not act like, you know, the Sabres were dominating possession and just all over them. It's 5-1, but Luukkonen has to make 37 saves.
And he made a huge save on that. Was it a breakaway or a 2-on-1? Where he has the blocker save. I don't know if you saw that one, but
I did not.
He was diving across the ice and threw out his blocker and made a great save into the corner.
It
was a good game from everyone. I'm not trying to sound so, you know, inflated here, but at the same time, it's like, if you just do that night in and night out, that's the consistency that Lindy Ruff is trying to strive for with these guys. And that's the consistency they've needed for the past 5, 6, 7 years.
They are getting helped by no one in the Atlantic really drifting away.
Right, yeah.
You're not seeing...
The Bruins. What's going on there?
You're not seeing the Tampa Bay's, Toronto's, Boston's all of a sudden like, oh, they're in their complete own tier. They're 8-2, and you're playing for a wild card. Everyone's in the same area. But to Paul Hamilton's point, we had him on yesterday, you're still in a spot, though. You're going to have to jump multiple teams. It's not like they made a ton of ground last night. They really didn't.
On one hand, they did, and on one hand, they didn't. Mm-hmm. Because while they're still in... If you look at the NHL standings site and you look at the wild card rankings, they're eighth in terms of wild card, not in terms of position in the Atlantic. In the Atlantic, they're much lower than eighth, or in the East, I should say. Sorry. Now, in the Eastern Conference, they are 14th. But if you look at the wild card standings, they are 1 point behind the Bruins, 2 points. Sorry, two points. Yep. I can't do math. It's fine. They're 2 points behind the Bruins. The Bruins have 13. The Sabres have 11. Between them and the Bruins, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams.
But you're all clumped together within 1 to 2 points.
They're all, yes. The Senators are one of those teams. The Senators are at 12 points mm-hmm. right now. The Sabres are at 11. That was a huge win in terms of getting back on the stat sheet in terms of points.
Yeah.
Like that was very important for the Sabres last night. One, to beat them, and two, to not let there was really never a chance for this, but not potentially let the Senators creep back in and get overtime and at least get mm-hmm. a loser point. Because then it's still you're not really making up ground on them specifically. But you look at all the other teams from last night or just from their recent games, the Blue Jackets just lost in overtime. The Islanders did win last night.
Ugh.
The Penguins lost in overtime. And the Red Wings won.
Every time the Islanders win, I just my day gets ruined.
It was you know what? It was a good win, in my opinion. Bo Horvat had a crazy good shootout move. It was a nice move.
Good for him.
Yeah, well, okay. Be that way, I guess.
I can't stand the Islanders.
Listen, the Islanders make me mad, but when they play good hockey, you know what? Good for them.
It is an important stretch of games here, though, for the Sabres. Obviously, you get the win last night in Ottawa, but now you go to the Rangers.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be tough.
That's going to be tough. Then home to Calgary.
The Sabres
home to Montreal as well. Monday, next Monday, 12:30 puck drop.
Oh,
they're like the only early game.
Oh, it's Veterans Day. That's
right, yes.
I was going to say, why are we at 12:30?
Well, I was looking at that. I'm like, they're 12:30. The next game starts at 7. What is happening here?
Standalone game against Montreal on Veterans Day. That's a good spot.
That's a very good spot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but Montreal's not been good.
No.
I'm not saying you've got to beat the Rangers in MSG.
You got to get a point.
But if you can get a point, then beat Calgary, then beat Montreal, again, you're just stacking points. You're keeping yourself within that race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the hope that, and you're sort of seeing it, they're getting more consistency. They're getting the lineups they want. And I think that's been, for me, maybe my favorite thing from Lindy Ruff so far in his return is that he is not coddling these guys. That's a word that Paul Hamilton's used a lot to describe how this team has been treated the last 2 or 3 years under Granato. Instead, now it is much more of a, no, I don't care that you guys are technically the youngest team in hockey. You've been here and done this.
Are you?
Now it is time for you to perform. And I also put that on Rasmus Dahlin.
Yes.
I did not see most of the game last night. Obviously, I was watching other things that went on. That's why I was up till like 2 in the morning. But I saw a lot of people upset at Ottawa's one goal and how he just kind of was in la-la land, it appeared. That he was frustrated at somebody else.
Yeah.
And he was just kind of not even paying attention to someone coming up on his backside.
I'm not trying to cut him any slack here, but if I'm remembering the goal correctly, it was one of those goals where...
I think it's more that the shot on net happened.
Yeah.
The goal itself is more lucky, a lot like Thompson scoring with his head.
I don't even know if you... yeah, basically, he scored with his back of his hand. Tuck shoots it, and it goes off the back of Thompson's hand. That's the only reason Thompson gets that goal. But if I'm remembering correctly, and I'll look at the highlight in a little bit here, but the goal was kind of a shot, and then the player can collect his own rebound.
Yep.
And it was just Lukanen was out of position because he just made a save. Mm-hmm. So it was Dahlin should have cleared that puck or should have not let the first shot happen in the first place.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's kind of one of those just fluky, unlucky goals. But it's definitely one where you would expect the defense to bail your goaltender out.
Yeah, you want better from Dahlin. That's the key part. He's your captain, and to be fair, up to this point, he hasn't had a very convincing season.
Mm-hmm. Right, and he did hit his 300 point plateau last night, which good for him, I think.
Absolutely.
I think that was it last night, but because they were talking about him on the broadcast with it, with like his assist numbers and things like that. But overall, it's again a consistency thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got to be able to be better in his own end. Yeah, he hit 301 last night. Actually, he had 2 assists. So, in the points department, he's doing great.
I am looking at some of these teams though in the Eastern Conference and just mainly goal difference.
Mm-hmm.
Boston -12.
Yeah, they got shut out by the Maple Leafs last night for the first time in like 8 years, or 8 games, I should say. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
It
kind of feels like 8 years, but.
Yeah. And they did that without Austin Matthews. I mean, they smoked them 4-0. Never really a contest.
I'm looking at the Rangers right now because that's the Sabres' next game. They play tomorrow in MSG. They're going to face Shesterkin, in my opinion. It's not confirmed yet or anything like that, but the Rangers have not played since Sunday.
Oof.
Are you a person where you look at that, and specifically in hockey, because I know it's different amongst different sports, but specifically in hockey, do you prefer the long break or do you despise it?
I think for me personally, and that's the thing too, I think you're the athlete I was, I hated the long wait.
Me too.
I always liked in high school, our swim meets were Tuesdays and Fridays.
Right.
And
yeah,
there wasn't
that's a nice little...
Yeah, it wasn't one meet a week. You had the two, championship season two, you had the big meet 1 week, and then the next weekend. It wasn't like you had to go through this like long stretch. Yeah. And that's where I think, too, it was always sort of this thing that you hear talked about when a team sweeps somebody in the playoffs, and then their eventual opponent...
Sweeps them or beats them easily.
Or has to go seven games, and you're just sitting there going... You guys gonna hurry this up? We haven't played in forever.
Well, yeah, exactly. And then, like I said, you go into the next round, and you either get swept or it's like a 5-game series.
Yep. So I mean, that could be something that's a positive for the Sabres, having played played 2 games.
Yeah.
Since.
So the Sabres played yesterday and
Saturday.
On Saturday. So they have played more games in the past 5 days than the Rangers, if you want to look at it that way, but. I look at the Rangers and how they are as a team. They're 8-2-0, which is fantastic.
They're fun. They're good.
Or 8-2-1, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. They have a +20 goal differential. Yeah, mostly because of Igor Shesterkin, I think.
Yeah, they've only given up 24 goals.
Yeah, they have outscored teams fairly decently. They put up 6.
Is that the best?
They put up 11 in their first 2 games. So, and then they put up 7 on Montreal at the end of October.
Like that is quite convincingly the best in the league in terms of their goal difference, or in terms of goals allowed.
Yeah. So that's going to definitely be something. But at the same time, you have a young, hungry Sabres team who looks to be going more towards the accountability that Lindy Ruff is looking for. I mean, again, we just talked about the Sabres coming off these long losing streaks, or the back and forth of losing 3, winning 3, and all that goes into that. But... you come off of these wins like last night, and it's like, just do that every night. How hard is it to be able to go out there and play like that?
And you're starting to see that, though. I think their biggest issue has been the inability to get anything from two of your young forwards, and Dylan Cousins and Jack Quinn. I think that has been a major issue for them going forward, because they're getting the depth scoring. Your top line's been fantastic.
I was going to say, because you have...
awesome. Perturka's been great. Thompson's back on like a 55-goal pace.
Yeah, and you have guys like Zucker, McLeod, and Greenway stepping up. Like you just said, the bottom six scoring, that's been great. The fourth line has been exactly what Lindy wanted it to be in terms of we're going to go in there and we're going to cause problems for the other team. Might not score a goal, but
we're going to cause problems,
frustrate them. And that's great. That's exactly what you need out of a fourth line. You might get a goal here and there, but that's not what they're there to do. And that's something that fourth line on the Sabres team has not done in a long time. Since the old days of you remember the log line? Larson, Okposo, Gergensen.
Love the log line.
That was the closest we've gotten to what you need out of a good bottom six checking
alone.
Line.
I love them for vibes alone.
And I look at, the Sabres coming off a win like that, and the Rangers coming off of this long rest of you don't know how teams are going to react to that. Granted, they were at home. They were playing the Islanders, so really they wouldn't have been away even if they were away. Mm-hmm. But they're at home against the Islanders and the Senators their last 2 games. So they haven't really left New York. They're still not gonna. And they're also on this long break. So one, that could be beneficial, but two, that could be bad. We've seen teams come off these breaks and, come out slow. So I hope that that's the case for the Sabres' sake. But at the same time, I hope the Sabres can ride their momentum into tomorrow night. I think it'd be very easy to come off a 5-goal win and say, yeah, here we are. We're back. Let's go. And they've always played the Rangers pretty decently, I feel like. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember not last year, it was 2 years ago when Luukkonen kind of had his coming out party of like this, here I am. And they forced overtime against the Rangers and got a crucial point at that point in the season. So, at the very least, just get a point against these guys. And I think that'll really help you out just in terms of momentum.
I think how they're playing, though, gives me a little bit more in terms of both the power play, the 5-on-5 scoring, what have you. It does give me at least a little bit of hope going into New York. Again, you said, you're probably playing Shesterkin. They've given up only 24 goals so far this year, although I think they've only played 11 games, too. So, they've got a little bit of the games against advantage. But
yeah.
Still, that's pretty comfortable. I think the second best team in terms of goals against right now is Winnipeg.
Winnipeg is crazy.
Is like, I gotta ask Paul about them because he mentions like the best teams in hockey, and I'm not hearing Winnipeg yet.
They're 12-1.
They're 12-1.
They have 62 goals for.
Yeah,
that is the best in the league by 12. The next closest is Vegas with 54.
So I mean, like.
That's nuts.
They're the next closest in goals against, 30 to, again, the 24 by New York or by the Rangers. But hearing those power play stats and them being now sixth best in the league through these last five games and such, and this includes a Detroit game in which they scored one goal and they were essentially a non-factor on offense. Mm-hmm. It gives me a little bit of excitement here going forward of, okay, maybe you can push the envelope against them, and maybe you could. They play well against some of these teams, surprisingly.
Like, the good teams, yeah.
It's Florida and Boston that they've typically, like, of the quote unquote good teams that they really just never played against. And Carolina
for sure.
But like those were the teams that they were good, and it's like, oh, and they're gonna make you look terrible.
Like, right.
But everyone else, it was, they would get up for these games. Vegas specifically, you know, you always kind of see them have a really good game against Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
If they can just string a few good games here again and then just never really drift away, yeah, it's frustrating, but I do think you have a GM that is maybe feeling the heat a little bit on his seat. And you've already – Elliot Friedman's 32 Thoughts, I think, from last week, talked about him being one of the most active GMs already.
Yeah.
And then seeing the second line not performing, I could see – not necessarily trading Jack Quinn or Dylan Cousins – but making a trade and going, no, this needs to be better.
Yeah, getting a piece to not replace them, but replace them in the lineup in a sense.
And to be honest, the way I hear Lindy Ruff talking, I cannot see him being okay with just standing pat.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like he came in to build credibility, not just in the coaching staff, not just on the team, but in everything. Kevin Adams was always kind of seen as like, they brought him in sort of weird circumstances. And while I've loved what he did with the scouting department and drafting, what have you.
Oh, for sure. I mean, drafting is off the charts in terms of what you've gotten out of the last 13 years of this drought. There's a reason why this drought has lasted so long. And it's because of poor drafting.
Yes. That's been one of the major pieces. But I think he's overall brought credibility. And Ruff has the gravitas enough within the organization that if he wanted them to go make a move, mm-hmm. I feel like he would. And just, again, the way he talks in the postgame and stuff, I've loved it because it's an entirely 180 from what we heard under Granato. If he's going, yeah, these guys aren't good enough, we need to go get somebody, I feel like he...
That'll carry weight.
I think it carries more weight than most. And mm-hmm.
More weight than a lot of the recent head coaches. I mean, you could probably go all the way back to Dan Bylsma and say, after Bylsma, any sort of conversation like that from the head coach would have just been like, okay.
We're going to see what we can do.
Well, we'll see what we can do, Ralph. We'll see what we can do. Like
Don.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I look at what these guys have had over the past few years in terms of coaches, and it's just like, you didn't have that. Well, yes, Lindy is a great hockey mind, but you didn't have that guy that just, hey, you're not playing well, and you're going to hear about it. It was never that sort of mindset.
It was nice for 6 months as they were like the true young growing team, but for the message to never change. And you're seeing now, it seemingly has like had to have been like ripped out of these guys, that mindset and what have you. And most, if not all, of these players talk about wanting accountability. I've liked what I've seen from the top line in terms of the forwards. You're seeing growth from guys like Owen Power, what have you. Bowen Byram had two goals last night. I thought mm-hmm. I thought he's looked pretty darn good all year.
Real quick, that pass from Ryan McLeod to Bowen Byram.
I love him.
The sauce pass from McLeod was, if you looked at it on the ice level of how high off the ice it was, it was probably at Ullmark's eyes.
Yeah.
And he got it up high enough and then down to McLeod.
It was perfect.
For a perfect one-timer. It's just, where...
And I'm
where McLeod, has that been?
I'm McLeod, and you mentioned Zucker earlier today, too.
Mm-hmm.
That should give Adams confidence.
Yeah, right.
To make trades.
That's a...
Because and, you... Well, not just trades, but to bring in guys. Because
mm-hmm.
they've nailed it.
With Zucker. And with McLeod.
And McLeod, I think, has been a home run.
And honestly...
Zucker's been really good, and even Beck Malenstein and Sam Lafferty on your fourth line has
looked
really
good.
It's
taken some time, but... Greenway's the same way.
Mm-hmm. It should give you confidence of, you know what, I can do, I don't want to make it sound like he's, you know, a kid that like needs that little like, you know, kick on the behind to be like, yeah, you got this. Like, he's a grown man. He gets this.
It does help.
I think it's the human element of, I can do this.
And that's where it also earns him credibility in terms of, he was for the first few years, it's, oh, this guy's a new GM. And
he's not doing anything. His big move is getting rid of a player that everyone knew wanted out.
Right, and all the other GMs in the league, kind of, whenever you are a new GM, it's got this sort of, I don't even know what you want to call it, but like the other GMs kind of look at you, especially the long tenured guys, like a Lou Lamoriello, look at you and just like, okay, well, you're new, cool.
Yeah.
What can I steal from you? Yeah, essentially,
you're not part of this old boys club.
Right, exactly. But now that you've made a few good signings, a few good trades, I think you're starting to see that credibility build and the confidence, because it's one of those things where you got to have the good connection between him and the coach and then him and the owner. And I think that's there, but now it needs to translate into, okay, we can all work together here to make a good move. Mm-hmm. And I think it happened this offseason and we just haven't seen it fully yet.
Yep. 803-0550 is the number to call. We're opening up phone calls here in this first hour. Going to be a little bit of a packed 11 o'clock hour, though. Kevin Bowen of 1075, the Fan over in Indianapolis, he'll join the show. I mean, the Colts have been a wild story. I'd want to talk about them even if the Bills weren't playing them this weekend. And then at 1130, Sal Capaccio. Bills stay, for the most part, pat in terms of trades yesterday, but a few roster moves. And even today, Mary Kay Colbert announcing that, or reporting that Quentin Jefferson coming back to the Bills. He did play with Buffalo back in 2020.
Veteran safety Mike Edwards is on his way to the Titans.
And then Edwards, he gets cut yesterday. He signed with the Titans today. And then Dwan Smoot going to IR. So a lot from the Bills, not necessarily on the trade end, but they're doing a lot of stuff. Sal's going to join us at 11:30. But looking for your calls now, 803-0550, the number two call. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
You know, I've probably been more patient than I've ever been, just trying to figure these guys out. But this is a standard you have to play to. And the standard hasn't been good enough. And other guys have sat. I met with both players today. I discussed what is acceptable and what will work if you're in the lineup. If you're not, I thought the guys that have stepped in have done a good job.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Mint, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Loved that from head coach Lindy Ruff there.
I think it's really telling that he sat down a guy like Matias Samuelson. Henry Okiharu, too, because he's been such a main fixture in this lineup. Not necessarily in a good way, but just in terms of he was always in the lineup, unless he was hurt. Mm-hmm. Same with Samuelson. I mean, those are two key figures of the Sabres last, 4 years that have been part of this team.
Yeah.
But man, Samuelson has been unplayable.
Yeah.
It's been rough. And I don't want to see him,
kind of fall away.
Fall away, yeah. And I think a big part of it's injuries. But at the same time, if he needs something like this to sit him down and kind of give him a wake-up call, perfect. But that was something you were never going to get until now. You needed something like this under Granato, where he would sit down players like Quinn and Samuelson and Okiharu and... There's other players too, but you didn't ever see that.
No.
You only had them sit because they were injured. And that was
really about it. Sabres do play again tomorrow night, MSG against the Rangers. Of course, a normal 7 p.m. puck drop. Although they do have a 7:30 game coming up here soon, which I hate immensely.
They do?
I don't like 7:30 puck drops at all.
I like 6:30 puck drops. They did that once last year, and I was like, this is great.
It's kind of cool. Yeah,
it's
a little different.
It's just kind of like you get out that much earlier. Oh, it's against the Blues. Oh, it's an ESPN game, that's why.
Okay, that makes sense.
I think it is. It looks like it is.
NFL trade deadline was yesterday. Bills, as you mentioned there at the end of the last segment there, didn't really do anything in terms of trades. They were, though, active in terms of just roster moves. And now it seems like they're bringing in Quentin Jefferson. That's coming initially from Mary Kay Colbert. She's a reporter out in Cleveland. And that's where Quinn Jefferson was. He's had a lot of stops, though, post his Bills time. That he was here for 1 year. That was in 2020. I remember him being okay. It more kind of seems like Dwayne Carter / Dwan Smoot replacement. Like, we just got to bring this guy in. We'll have this work. Nothing yet on Jordan Phillips, though, which, Josh, I don't know if you saw his Instagram yesterday.
I did.
Seemed like he was coming here and then nothing.
Well, so he got released by the Cowboys.
Yeah, and then like 20 minutes later on his Instagram was like, let's roll it back with him and like the Bills. Now I'm almost wondering, like, was that him just making a sales pitch?
Maybe. That's kind of a good point. But I also wonder if it's there's not like a waiting period or anything, but is it a the two sides are trying to figure out some kind of money situation, or was it the Bills were focused on one thing and then they got to shift to him?
I mean, yeah, it's going to be interesting. So fun enough, Quentin Jefferson usually spends like just 1 to 2 years on teams.
Really?
Fifth round pick out of Maryland in 2016 to Seattle, spends 1 year there, then goes to the Rams. Goes back to Seattle from 2017 to 2019, and then we're on the one-year train again. Bills 2020, Raiders 2021, Seahawks again 2022, New York Jets 23, and then Cleveland Browns 24.
Wait, you said he spent 1 year in Seattle and then went back?
Yep. And then after 2019, he will eventually go back to the Seahawks in 22.
Oh, I see the Rams one.
My goodness,
he was,
three stints with
them. He was signed by the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
On September 3rd of 2017, he was released by the Rams on September 14th. Or no, he was released, and then he was placed on the practice squad on September 14th.
Oh, okay, okay.
And then October, they released him, and then the same day, the Seahawks signed him.
Goodness gracious.
So he didn't even play for the Rams. He was just...
He was just there.
He was just there.
Practice squad member.
And
yeah,
then,
he's made a lot of stops, and usually does like 1 to 2 years. That's stressful. He's been in the league every year since 2016. But he has yet to really, like...
He's got 27 and a half sacks, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's been fine. I have no problem with it. Again, just... I would have liked them to make a move on the defensive line. I get they...
Technically, that is a move.
Yeah.
Not a trade, though. I know what you mean. It's just... But at the same time, after the Za'Darius Smith move, I don't really think there was much out there that they were interested in.
White, by the way, he got moved yesterday.
Good for him.
I don't know if I'm necessarily saying good for him.
Really?
Two seventh round picks, one of which is in 2027.
I'm more so looking at just getting to the Ravens because I think, I mean, I heard a.
You hope he can maybe get a ring.
Yeah, but I also heard a clip from Lewis Riddick this morning on Trey White going to the Ravens, and he was saying, not to his detriment, but that Trey White is a systems, he fits their system. Not saying he's a systems cornerback, but like...
But he fits what they do.
He fits what they do because of where he's at in his career and what he did when he was with the Bills. He didn't really fit what the Rams had.
I feel for him because I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah, he fell a long way. But a large in part due to injuries, which sucks. I mean, that's... He was my favorite player on the Bills when he was here. Like, he still is one of my favorite players in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But when he was here, it was the Trey White Goalie Academy. It was all of his antics on and off the field of just being a great person and funny guy. And also just his play. I mean, 7 interceptions. Come on.
Yeah.
That's just... That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just... I hope the best for him. Also... Don't really know because he's on the Ravens.
Yeah.
I say that
with the Rams. I'm like, cool. You're in the NFC. Like, if we meet, it's in the Super Bowl. Now it's like, oh, come on, man.
Yeah. Now it's like, you know,
not his choice, but here we are.
If they got to play the Rams, it's like you might, you know, break streams a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, but at the same time, like I said, if he does get there, he's one of the former Bills that I would love to see get a ring.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think he deserves it.
Oh, 100%. His career just frustrated by because injuries ultimately derailed it completely.
Talking on the rest of the trade deadline, because I know we're kind of talking around the trade deadline here. Obviously, the Bills didn't do much, but someone else in the AFC did. And for some people, that's making them shoot up their like power rankings, if you will. The Steelers traded for...
Pittsburgh!
Steelers traded for Mike Williams, and everyone's like, oh, they're going to rival the Chiefs. And I'm like, wait a minute. You have George Pickens and Mike Williams.
The Mike Williams move doesn't move me. The Preston Smith move, though.
Yeah?
Not really. No.
I was going to say, really? Really?
It's still Pittsburgh. Doing the reverse AFC power rankings yesterday with Shelton Bulldog.
Mm-hmm. Had that trade gone down yet?
Yeah. Pretty much all of the trades.
Okay. Right. Because it was,
It was more, though, like, who would you rather play in the playoffs? Like, the Chargers or the Steelers? For me now, right now, it is the Chargers. I think they are getting themselves going. You've got Justin Herbert there. I will say, and I want to make sure I get the week right in terms of when they did play, Pittsburgh did beat the Chargers. That was week 3, 20-10. I would take the Chargers right now over Pittsburgh. I would.
I
think you're getting stuff out of Herbert. You're finding out what you have in Ladd McConkey. They're getting Quentin Johnston going, which is insane.
So why would you take them? If all these players are getting rolling.
Sorry. In terms of the rankings, in terms of who I play in the playoffs, Pittsburgh.
Oh.
Sorry, I misread that. I would play Pittsburgh.
I was
going to
say you're talking these guys up, and then you're saying you want to play them in the playoffs.
I
was
going to
say the answer is a slam dunk. It's Pittsburgh. Like
I'd rather
the Steelers.
Play
while Russell Wilson is getting better, the Steelers are just one bad drive away from just shelling up because that's what I think is, you know, Mike Tomlin's like go-to is like, you know, if the team's rolling, let them do their thing. But if you have one bad sign, that team just kind of, okay, we just gotta fall back on the defense and
yeah, it's more they fall back on the defense. I've liked how Russell Wilson's playing. I haven't necessarily loved it by any means.
It's better than Kenny Pickett.
It's better than Kenny Pickett.
it's almost better than Justin Fields.
The passing game is better than Justin Fields.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
But yeah. I'm not at a point where I'm sitting here going, oh man, here they come. No,
they still are that team though, where they could just ruin your season in the wild card round. I mean, they will never not be that team.
I don't know if they are, though, in all honesty. I don't know if I'm there, like, in terms of, like, thinking, like, they're the team that's going to ruin it for me. I look at a team more like the Bengals or the Chargers. They get into the wild card where you're like, oh, man, we got to play them. Right. Like, I don't really want that at all.
Well, because that's what the Steelers were for years, and I think they could be back to that point. But last year, everyone was kind of saying that about them, and then the Bills went out there and whooped them.
Like, let's look at their last three wins.
Yep, the Steelers.
Vegas.
This is the Steelers.
Yeah, this is the Steelers. Okay. Vegas, 32-13. They're lost in the desert. They have no idea what they're doing.
Literally lost in the desert.
The Jets.
Sure, yeah.
And the Giants.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, like...
Those are nothing wins.
And I don't like poking and prodding at a schedule, because you play who you play.
Right, yeah. You can't really control that.
But let's not also crown a team who we've all kind of seen as like, they're okay, they're solid, they're good.
I think it's fair to look back when Fields was quarterback. They beat Denver, they beat Atlanta, and they beat L.A.
They did.
They also lost to Indianapolis.
They did. And Dallas.
And Dallas, which take that with what you will.
And to be fair, Atlanta, you take current Kirk Cousins, Atlanta's probably beating them.
That's fair, because Atlanta did take
Denver,
some time.
Denver, that's Bo Nix's second career start. I'm not saying they're perfect. I mean, Baltimore blew them out.
It was 13-6.
That could be interesting. And like I mentioned, the current Chargers team where Ladd McConkey's kind of developed into something that they really like there. And you got Quentin Johnston. They got those wins early. I mean, again, you play who you play, and they got those good wins.
Yeah.
But like Dallas looks like a bottom five roster right now, and they lost.
And they're hurt.
Indianapolis. I don't know what's going on there. We're going to talk to Kevin Bowen here coming up in just about 15 minutes. I'm excited for that conversation because I do not know what's going on with the Colts.
But you're also...
And then you beat three bad teams.
Yeah, and then you look at their upcoming games. They have Washington, Baltimore, Cleveland, Cincinnati. Washington...
Is anyone going to be surprised if they go 1-3 in that four-game run?
I think they might go 0-4.
0-4 would be a little surprising only because of Cleveland.
Yeah.
Jameis Winston, I love when he plays the game of football, mainly because it is just flat-out entertaining. He will either throw 400 yards and three touchdowns, or he will throw four picks.
He might do both.
Yeah, I was just saying, even in the fun game, he's probably throwing picks that should be intercepted. Or he's throwing passes that should be intercepted.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, Washington should steamroll them, especially with adding Marshawn Lattimore. I mean, that's just a great trade from them.
I'm really liking
it. So good from them. I love that they're just getting after it, too, because it was very much this, let's see how Jaden Daniels goes. They're really good.
Yep.
And then you also obviously have Baltimore, and then Cleveland... That's, again, that toss-up game. But Cincinnati, I mean, they're coming to life. I think they should probably handle the Steelers. But they always play each other weird.
Even just go past Cincinnati. They click Cleveland again, sure. But then at Philadelphia. Yeah, take what you will with Philly. Philly, they are a talented team. I think they're poorly coached, but they are talented.
And right now, I mean, I saw a thing. I think it was on ESPN. Are the Eagles winning in spite of?
Yes. The answer is yes. Then they get at Baltimore, Kansas City, Cincinnati. That is a tough road to finish out the season.
Oh, I forgot. They're the Netflix Christmas game this year.
Kansas ruined my holidays.
Great. You don't have to watch it.
What else am I going to do?
Open gifts? Spend time with your family?
I do that in the morning. Spending time with my family? We're all in front of the TV.
Yeah,
all
right.
Watching sports. That's what we're going
to
do.
You don't go in? You all stay at your house and everyone comes to your house?
No. We go out to my aunt's house.
Yeah, see? So just plan your
drive. Then the TV will be on and we're all watching sports.
Watch basketball.
That's something. I'm not typically a basketball guy in terms of the regular season. I love NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
But like Christmas was NBA's day. And then the NFL's like, it's ours now. And then they put the Chiefs and the Ravens on again. And a part of me, working in this industry and having to work a lot of Thanksgivings immediately when I got here.
Well, no, it's Chiefs and Steelers.
They have two games. Chiefs and Ravens both are playing on Christmas again. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, in a row? 2 years in a row?
Yeah, what do we...
Come on.
No.
I'm not a huge fan of it.
No.
Not a huge fan of it at all.
I also don't. I never want the Bills to play on Christmas. Nope. I don't know if you're that way, but I just I don't want that.
I don't. I'm not gonna lie. After like one Thanksgiving game, like the Dallas game for the Bills, I was like, all right, I'm done. I'm good with no Thanksgiving games ever again. I didn't even work that one. That was before I worked.
Well, it's
here.
Not even working it. It's just like that's like there's a lot of pressure because it's not only just an important game, but it's just. It's a holiday.
It also
everyone expects
like,
an incredible performance, and then if you lay a dud, everyone's like, yep, they're not going to do anything this
year. And I just remember it's like, all right, guys, like, I mean, like, they're in the 4 o'clock window. Like, do we have dinner early? Do we have dinner later? And everyone's like, no, we're doing it early. We're going to just get this out of the way, and then we're going to get ready for this. And ultimately, it was a great day, but I remember the lead-up to that game was like, this could be bad, right? Like, because we weren't used to winning yet. It's 2019. We were not used to that yet at all. All right, it is Wash and Fold Wednesday. The Bills are taking on the Indianapolis Colts, and man, it has been a wash at the quarterback position since the retirement of Andrew Luck just a few weeks before the 2019 season. Question of the day, how many starting quarterbacks have the Colts had since the retirement of Andrew Luck right before the 2019 season? First caller at 716-221-4WGR. That's 716-221-4947. With the correct answer, wins a $100 gift card to Top Shelf Wash and Fold Laundromat. Drop off your laundry dirty and pick it up clean and packaged for you. Complete laundry services from a coin laundromat. Top Shelf Laundromat, because we all deserve the best, with three locations, Depew, Williamsville, and Tonawanda. Going to be right back after a quick timeout. Coming up at 11 o'clock, we'll get more on the Colts as Kevin Bone of 1075 The Fan joins the show. You're listening to WGR. And Fold Wednesday trivia question, Dave in Lancaster. The question, of course, being how many starting quarterbacks have the Indianapolis Colts have had since the retirement of Andrew Luck right before the 2019 season? The answer was 10.
10 is
we will go
bad.
Through them here. They had two in 2019. Jacoby Brissett played 15 games. Brian Hoyer played one.
Which one? Was it like early on or like later?
It was. Let me grab that because I just had that up. That was a week.
Was it right after Luck got hurt? I feel like he came in right away and then they signed Brissett from somewhere or traded for Brissett.
Brissett was already there.
Oh, okay.
So this is week 10, November 10th against the Miami Dolphins. It is a loss for them 16-12 and Hoyer goes 18-39, 204, one touchdown, three picks.
It's not great.
No, it's bad.
But for Brian Hoyer.
Fair. 2020, we all kind of know this one. Phillip Rivers, Bills end up playing them in the first playoff game in Highmark Stadium with fans in it in a long time. Awesome to see that. 21 is Carson Wentz. 22.
Don't you dare. I thought you were about to disrespect my boy Carson Wentz.
Well, that was kind of the last run for him.
Don't. No.
22, three quarterbacks, Matt Ryan, Sam Ehlinger, and Nick Foles. And then 2023, Gardner Minshew for most of the season, Anthony Richardson being their first-round pick, though, played four games. And then Richardson being the first quarterback to start multiple games in back-to-back seasons, started games this year. And then Joe Flacco has so far started three games this year. They have just been
all over the place.
Oof. I mean, they're quickly ascending towards like those Cleveland Browns. The jerseys with all the names on them from like 20 years. They're getting close to that. They're getting really close to that. To have 10 starting quarterbacks in what, a 5-year run? Oof.
Yeah.
And you've had guys start full seasons.
Oh, yeah. It's not even like they're it's not like how the Browns have been, where it's like you play a few games. It's like, nope.
Then this guy goes in. Like, I mean, they're getting to that now, mainly due to injuries and then whatever's going on with Anthony Richardson. I'm very excited to talk to Kevin Bowen about that because mm-hmm. I outside looking in, it feels more like a character issue than playing issue. So we'll see on that.
Are we going to see Sam Ehlinger again? He's still on the roster.
Is he?
Yeah, he's right behind. He's the
probably not.
I think we
probably
should.
Not.
I think we should. If Joe Flacco goes down, if Joe Flacco goes down, skip right over Anthony Richardson. Bring me Sam Ehlinger.
Skip right over him. That's
teach
tough.
Him.
That'd be tough.
Hey, if it is a character thing, that would really teach him.
That would be tough.
Come on. You're not. You're telling me you wouldn't want to see another Texas alum get active?
I mean, I loved Sam at Texas. Like, he ran like a linebacker at quarterback. It was a lot of fun. But, like, let's not do that. We don't got to do that again. 803-0550 is the number to call. We will now get more on the Indianapolis Colts after a quick timeout. Kevin Bone of 1075 The Fan joins the show next. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Things changed there. So I think right now, sitting back and seeing a veteran that's done it at a high level for a long time, you can develop that way as well. McKinsey, you go through that process and learn.
There's Colts head coach Shane Steichen. Really, the Colts have kind of been one of the main characters here in this mid-window, Josh. I mean, just in terms of what's going on at their quarterback position, they go to Joe Flacco. It's not like it's the Cleveland Joe Flacco either, where all of a sudden they're lighting up the scoreboard and they're making a run here. It's been kind of ugly, and it feels like a weird situation. The Bills are on the road this weekend on Sunday in Indianapolis against the Colts, 1 p.m. kickoff, and it's feeling like one of those games. I mean, I know I'm looking forward to Chiefs week as well, but as I was mentioning here, as we bring in our next guest, Kevin Bowen of 1075 The Fan. Kevin, I wanted to talk to you anyways, even if the teams weren't playing, because I am just lost on what's going on.
Yeah, join the club. There's 2 million people in the population of Indianapolis. Very confusing, just a total 180 from where they were organizationally. I would say the three most important voices in that organization, owner, GM, and head coach, where they were back when Richardson was drafted in April 2023 of, hey, we need to practice patience. And I would say, to an element, you could speak to it better. Maybe you guys kind of lived that early on with Josh Allen as well. And that was kind of the thought of, there will be growing pains. The college resume is not good. Bear with us, all of those things. And then 10 starts into it, a very abrupt ending. And now it's, hey, it's win now. And it's like, wait a minute, what happened when $20 million cap space was sat on in the offseason? And they didn't make a single move for any sort of starting competition in the offseason either. So I think it's just a lot of confusion for the franchise in regards to the most important position in sports.
And on that patience part, our morning show host, Joe DiBiase, he went through it this morning, just kind of breaking down all their stats. And they're about where you expected second-year Josh Allen and Anthony Richardson to be at. And that leads me to kind of wonder, and again, this is all outside looking in, but we all heard about he took himself out of a game because he was tired and such. Like, it makes you almost wonder, like, is this a maturity thing? Like, is this why they're yanking him? But then, to hear Steichen, I think, essentially say that, like, no, Flacco's the starter, like, the rest of the year. It has left me kind of, like, dumbstruck. It's like, you knew he was a raw quarterback that didn't play a lot at Florida. And now, again, 10, like, as you put, 10 starts in, it seems like it might be over, if I'm not reading that wrong.
Yeah, I mean, there was a thought, this time last week, I thought, okay, is this a one-week benching? The tap out, obviously, is a very jarring move for a quarterback to make. Is this bad? And they made it abundantly clear it was not bad. Obviously, Flacco was really bad Sunday night and will indeed be the starter coming up on Sunday against Buffalo. So, Steichen is not super transparent with his words in regards to the why. I mean, he throws out the word professional a couple of different times, though. Is there something off the field? Non-tap related that they feel like, they need to get more out of? I mean, obviously the standard of a quarterback in the NFL, I mean, it's huge. It's not your high school student body president. It's bigger than that. So, is that not there? That's probably a fair question to be asked. And obviously his play on the field was not at a, good level, but certainly there was an element of you had to expect it. And the offense turns very one-dimensional. And on Sunday night, without the run game, the one dimension was pretty bad. So, again, it's just head-scratching. It's confusing. It's a very mixed message from where they were at, back in April of 2023. And it's not like Flacco, again, short-term, long-term. It's not like you're in a position necessarily to get on a run with Flacco. And then long-term, I mean, he turns 40 in January, and what are you doing? Are you going to about to have one of the more awkward off-seasons in Colts history of, Anthony Richardson, we just benched him for fun, like, trust us, year three, this is going to be the year, 10 starts, et cetera, et cetera. 2025, that's where he's going to really take off. It's just a very awkward time for the Colts, their fan base, and their franchise.
So I guess going off of that, what do you think the next little bit here holds for Anthony Richardson and the Colts. Is he going to be someone that tries to get traded in the offseason? Is he going to be maybe back at the end of the year? I have no idea what they're going to do here. I think they should play him more, but at the same time, if you're not going to play him, you should probably try to move him, right?
Yeah, they certainly, you know, had some calls here before the trade deadline, and they elected not to do anything on that end. I think, now again, there's no past precedent that would indicate they are right on this. They are going to turn back to him. They're going to give him the keys at some point again. Now, when is that? You know, if you look at their schedule upcoming, it's a very difficult stretch. You know, if it goes poorly for Flacco, do they turn to him at, you know, whatever, the start of December? If they're, you know, seemingly out of the playoff picture, the odds don't look good. Or is it, like I said, going to be a really weird and awkward offseason of like, yeah, we're going to start him again next year. And, you know, I mean, 10 starts is, I mean, it's nothing. And you know, part of me thinks it's low-hanging fruit to just make the Josh Allen comp. But, you know, for what it's worth, I think entering the draft, a lot of people, you know, made a similar comparison, you know, playing style, size, college resume between the two quarterbacks, Richardson and Allen. And, again, you guys know full well, bailing on Josh Allen 10 starts into the career would not have been the right move at all. So, you know, do you leave that glimmer of hope? You're probably going to be around 500 at the end of the year. You're drafting in the middle of round one. That's an awkward place. Do you, again, do what, you know, Buffalo did and make a trade-up if you identify a quarterback? Or how do you handle all of it? So, again, I think they will turn to him again, but, you know, there's no past precedent for a first-round quarterback to have been benched by that franchise and then all of a sudden to resurrect whatever career they feel like is there.
Kevin Bowen on the West Her Hotline over on 1075 The Fan in Indianapolis. Kevin, I guess one of the other weird parts about this has been, too, it's not like the Colts are like a 1-7 or, you know, a 1-8 team, 2-7 team. Like, they're 4-5. And, yeah, they've ultimately lost, I think, the last two straight. But it seemed like a team that was just kind of, you know, they're figuring out. They're a young team. I think we talked in the offseason about, like, what the expectations were going to be, and it seemed like they were somewhat relatively in terms of a team meeting them. Jonathan Taylor comes back. He's playing pretty well. I do want to touch on that as well. It's just, you know, where, I guess, are the fans sitting with this? Is there sort of this anti-Richardson, pro-Richardson camp, or is kind of everyone in one spot or another? Kevin, are you there?
Sorry about that. I think this point last week, people were on the Flacco, hey, win now, you know, camp of, hey, look what he did in Cleveland last year. And, again, I think there was a bit of a misnomer of, you know, Cleveland had their one ranked defense in the NFL when he took over. They were 7-4. And, you know, if you look at Flacco's recent run, obviously great in Cleveland last year, very impressive what he did, come off the couch. And he's also 8-17 in his last 25 starts. So you probably can't lose sight of that either. So I think last week, the split would have been probably like 70-30, 65-35. People didn't want the benching, but, you know, there was still a percentage that was okay with seeing Flacco. And now I think you actually see a loss play out in prime time. Flacco is a big reason for that loss. And I think now the frustration has really bubbled to, if you did that same poll, it'd probably be something like 90-10. And I think you can look at it one of two ways. You know, if you're all in on Richardson and you think he deserves more starts, I mean, what unbelievable opportunities, whether that would have been Sunday night against the Brian Flores defense or this week, you know, in such a marquee matchup, you know, against a guy like Josh Allen, future Hall of Famer next week in Aaron Rodgers. They play the Lions in a couple weeks. Again, great unscripted game rep opportunities he never sniffed at Florida or hasn't really had much of in the NFL. And then on the flip side of it, if you are skeptical about Richardson, there probably is a part of it, which sounds weird, of like, continue to play him. And if it continues to go poorly and the arrow continues to point down, now you have your answer at the end of the 2024 season, or you have a clearer answer on it, and you can operate in the offseason in a different manner than maybe you will now. Like I said, I think they will act like Richardson is their guy in 2025. So that just delays this answer further, and if you're wrong on it, now you've wasted an entire offseason. So I would say fans, again, there's a little bit of, hey, Flacco, maybe win now, but I mean, for those unfamiliar with the Colts, they've hovered around 7 to really 11 wins with Gardner Minshew, Carson Wentz. Matt Ryan's season was really bad. You know, Jacoby Brissett, they won 11 with Phillip Rivers, lost to the Bills in the playoffs. You know, again, Carson Wentz was a 9-win season. So they've done this song and dance with different lead actors. I think they almost view it as Flacco's kind of the same guy, just a different actor.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, for what it's worth, at least it won't be a boring offseason. You know, whatever happens, it's going to be interesting. I did mention Jonathan Taylor here, and for us in Buffalo now, it's become, at least this season, anytime there's a good running back, our blood starts to boil and we start sweating bullets. It's just the Bills, they've not really handled running backs well this year, or at least good rushing teams. Derrick Henry, notably on primetime, just ran all over the Bills. Devon Achane last week, yes, it ends in a win, but it didn't leave you with a lot of confidence. And Jonathan Taylor, since coming back from his injuries to start the year, Kevin, he's looked great. I mean, just under 5 yards per carry. It looks like, for the most part, outside of last week, he's been awesome in every game. What have you seen from him?
Yeah, when Richardson has been next to him, he's been uber, uber good. And I'd say when Flacco's been next to him, it hasn't been at the Jonathan Taylor level that we're used to. They struggled to run it again, 3.7 per carry the other night with Flacco. Now, Taylor hasn't been with Flacco, you know, a ton this season, but I think that is a question you have of just how dynamic is this run game with Flacco and the lack of attention that's needed in the run game versus with Richardson. Now, certainly you guys saw it firsthand a couple of years ago what Taylor can do when he's humming, and that's one of the finest games of his NFL career. And I do think he still has that in him, but the Colts have yet to kind of find that fully, again, especially with Flacco. And they could be starting – they will start two rookies on their offensive line. They could be starting three, depending on a concussion protocol situation with their left tackle. So that is something to keep an eye on as well for Sunday. And just the whole revival of the run game has to happen. The passing offense just isn't efficient and crisp enough to not have Jonathan Taylor at that Pro Bowl level. And there's been moments of that this season, but you know, lately it just hasn't been there necessarily for him. And again, he's coming off an ankle injury from a few weeks ago and missed some time. So he's too dynamic of a player not to have him above, you know, more than 4 yards per carry. So certainly it'll be a huge storyline given, you know, Buffalo and some of the struggles that they've had there.
So sticking with the offense, I wanted to talk about the wide receiver room because it's kind of a weird room. Like, obviously you have Michael Pittman Jr. there, and but he hasn't had really that good of a season. Is that mostly on the quarterbacks, or is it like just the passing game in general?
So Pittman suffered a back injury about 3 or 4 weeks ago. I don't know, unless you're a fantasy football owner of Michael Pittman, you probably didn't pay too much of attention to it. But there was a debate that they put him on injured reserve. And then all of a sudden it's like, no, he's going to play through this back injury. He's going to play through it. Well, I want to say in the last – I forget the exact numbers. I want to say it's 2 catches on 10 targets maybe in the last 2 weeks. Just a really, really bad percentage. He's not creating much separation at all. He just doesn't look like anywhere near the same player. They decreased his playing time from 95% of the snaps the week prior to around 75% last week. So I think they have to have a real conversation about Pittman and just his play time. He's going to continue to play through it, those things. Now, they have some other guys. Alec Pierce is a true home run hitter. He has done that this season. Josh Downs is a really, really good slot wideout and can do a little bit more than just that. And their rookie, A.D. Mitchell out of Texas, has been open. It's just not been a lot of either, hey, he has dropped balls or, you know, receivers haven't, or quarterbacks haven't gotten it to him. He made a great catch on the sideline last week. So they have some other options there. They're a terrible tight end group. They won't do anything there of note. But those are probably some of the questions right now, pass catching wise. Pittman's back, and then just kind of the trickle down effect off of that with guys and their respective playing time.
Kevin, you have no idea how badly I needed to hear you say that Adonai Mitchell is, in fact, getting open. They're just not getting him the ball. I was a big A.D. Mitchell fan for this draft class for the Bills, and to see him go to the Colts, I was crushed. And then I saw I've only seen the week one numbers of, like, just how much he was getting open, and I, when I tell you it breaks my heart, it broke my heart. Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a guy that certainly, I think, was a pretty volatile draft prospect. You know, some people had him going as high as round one, and, you know, he fell to, I believe, the 11th wideout taken. So you know, they would like a little bit more consistency. And, again, it's not just him. I mean, he has gotten open, but, you know, whether it's, hey, you're not in the right place or, you know, some drops, certainly I think we're kind of waiting for the, hey, when's the 4-catch, 72-yard day? Again, he had an unbelievable toe tap catch the other day, but I think that'll be something to keep an eye on if they're going to decrease Pittman's playing time.
So, Kevin, shifting to the Colts defense here. Obviously, the Bills' offense has been kind of clicking lately. It's the passing game's getting a little more what we kind of expected it to be, especially with the addition of Amari Cooper. What's going to be the Bills' biggest issue on the Colts defense here? I mean, is it going to be the line? Is it going to be the secondary? What are you looking at here?
Yeah, honestly, just go back to Sunday night. You know, that was a game where their defensive tackles helped wreck that game early on and, frankly, keep the Colts very much in it. They were up 7-0 at halftime because of a Grover Stewart defensive tackle strip sack of Sam Darnold. So that duo is extremely disruptive in the DeForest Buckner, and not just space-eating defensive tackles. We're talking playmaking defensive tackles. So it starts there. And really, outside of that, I'd say the unit is pretty blah. There's nothing that I think really stands out. The secondary is super inexperienced. I think if you look back on the Colts' wins over the last year, even year plus, I would argue they haven't beaten a quality quarterback in that entire span. The list of quarterbacks is about as ugly as you're going to find, and certainly Josh Allen does not qualify as one of those. So I think that is just kind of a general defensive question. The run defense has been an issue this season. I want to say they're, 29th, 30th, something like that, in rushing yards allowed. Early on in the year, even with that defensive tackle pairing healthy, they really struggled in that area. Buckner then missed a month plus. Now he's back. So I would start there. Buckner and Stewart, you know, how much can they disrupt? I think would be a worry if you're Buffalo.
And then, Kevin, last question here. The AFC South as a whole. Houston kind of had a lot of expectations coming to this year. They're 6-3. It's not like they're bad by any means, but they haven't felt like I think many were expecting the Houston Texans to feel like. Colts, of course, we've been talking about it. They've had their issues. And then Tennessee and Jacksonville. Oh, boy. Oh, franchises. They're definitely NFL franchises. What is your feeling on the AFC South at this point? I mean, for me, at least personally, it feels like it's the Thursday night special all over again with the AFC South. They're all kind of going back to what they were.
Yeah, Thursday night special is a good way to put it. I have labeled it before for those NCAA tournament diehards. I call it the True TV division. Mm-hmm. It's like the division you just put on True TV and you're like, wait, what? You know, what channel number is that? Now, I had higher expectations for the division this season. I thought that, you know, Houston, I still think record-wise, you know, is pretty much where you'd expect them to be at. I thought Jacksonville would get a little bit more back to where they were first couple months of last season. They obviously have not done that. And I even thought Tennessee would give you a little bit more than they have. And probably some people would say the Colts, depending on how you kind of view them into the season, a little bit more on the underwhelming side of it. So, again, overall, I thought they've been the laughing stock for years. I thought they I thought they'd be a little bit better in that area, but it's kind of been same old, same old. And, you know, the Colts have lost both games to Houston, so unless the Texans totally fall apart, Houston's likely to run away with it. And, you know, I thought they'd be a little bit more competitive with Indy and maybe even Jacksonville than it has been so far.
Kevin, man, thank you so much for joining us today. Enjoy the game on Sunday and have a great rest of your week.
You bet, guys. Thanks for having me.
That was Kevin Bowen. 1075, the Fan over in Indianapolis. And yeah, I mean, the Colts, again, I would have wanted to talk about the Anthony Richardson stuff regardless if the Bills were playing him, which was a nice, easy excuse.
It's such an interesting situation that they're in. I really...
And they did it all to themselves, though.
Right, yeah. And, like, but it's also like it's one of those things where I feel like the easy answer, and this is me as not an NFL executive of a team that's kind of floundering right now, the easy answer is, hey, guys, we messed up. He's not working out. Let's move on. Right? I mean, I think that might be the best case scenario for them.
It's tough to make that distinction, though, after 10 starts.
It is. It is. But at the same time, if they're already sick of him,
yeah,
why waste your time?
And also, how did you not get any of that in the draft process?
I guess for me,
where, and I don't want to like just, you know, beat the dead horse and be like, you guys totally messed this up. Everything you did was wrong. But it's like... It is one of those of, and we were talking with Joe DiBiase on his way out because, you know, he went through the stats and everything like that, and he's somebody that really thinks like it has to be a maturity thing.
Mm.
You know, when you look at Josh Allen and his development, the man is a lunatic. Like, we all joke that he's a golden retriever, but like, he has really gone to the lab and changed his throwing motion. And every year you hear about he's throwing with Jordan Palmer, what have you, and fixing his game into what he is now, where Richardson. 10 starts in, I think he's completed over 10 passes like twice in his career through the 10 starts, so he's not efficient. You know, he's an uber athlete, but barely could get on the field at Florida. They're not necessarily this runaway, they're not the Tim Tebow Florida Gators. I mean, I'll tell you that right now.
This season, Richardson had 17 completions against the Packers in a loss.
And that's it. Everything else has been 10.
10 against the Bears in a win. 10 against Miami in a win, and 10 against Houston in a loss. That's this season.
And we're hearing Josh go 9 for 30, and like, I mean, like, alarms were going off. I mean, like, it's
right.
And they're in different spots in their career. I get it. But I think it's also something, too, of every time he goes and runs, he gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't even necessarily sit there and go, oh, he's like a Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts type weapon. He's not.
Yeah.
He's a guy that, like, you can't sit there and decide, we're going to do something like our own Philly special. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Are
you kidding? Or we're gonna try to develop him like Josh Allen, where there's so much that has to go into that. And that's the thing is, like, if Indianapolis is not ready to sign up for that, then you definitely have to move on. But that's only something that Indy can decide, and it seems like they can't decide anything lately.
Yeah.
And I think that
his big plays also will keep them. I think the big plays that he has the ability to make are gonna keep teams going, like, if we can just
figure
a lot like Allen, if you can tame the Mustang.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden you got something.
Brian Daboll was able to do that. Mm-hmm. And look at Allen now. I think he's becoming...
I think most of us assume Shane Steichen would really be able to do it.
Right. But for a minute, I remember the conversation around Allen was, especially last year with Dorsey, mm-hmm. was he dependent on Brian Daboll? But he's definitely broken that mold. And if you can get Anthony Richardson, someone that can rein him in, whether it be a coordinator, an offseason workout guy, whatever, if you can do something to get him reined in, you can have the same sort of conversations of, well, if he can do this without that guy, then he's for sure something. But at the same time, like I said before, if the Colts don't want to go through that, they need to move on. But again, like you said, that should have been something they saw in the draft process.
Yeah, that you're like, oh, this guy's not going to
– right.
He's not you know, a workaholic or whatever. Yeah, you know, whatever. Yeah. Because personality traits have become a major thing in the NFL. I mean, you're seeing the Bengals go through it too where, yeah, you got Jermaine Burton and you got him late, but sometimes character red flags are legit
mm-hmm.
to the point where they were building a foundation around him for Sunday and he's just a no-show for Saturday walkthroughs.
Yeah.
And now you've got leaders on the team having to answer for him and not really answering for him. They're just saying, like, dude, you got to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes character concerns are legit. I didn't hear anything, though, from Richardson. That was not a thing. It was just that he was raw.
It was the helmet tap. That was the thing that everyone's kind of questioning of, like, okay, if he's doing that on the field, mm-hmm. is he doing anything behind closed doors? Which we don't know. But at the same time, you're not going to know that because it's the NFL. They keep all that stuff secret. But it's such a fascinating issue to be in if you're outside mm-hmm. looking in, if you're a Colts fan, I'm sorry. But if you're looking at it from our perspective, it's just kind of an interesting situation because this is, and Jeremy and Joe were talking about this a little bit earlier with the value of draft picks and mm-hmm. things like that, of how quickly do you move on nowadays? How easily can you say, okay, this is not working out. It's a year and a half in. Sure, it's only 10 starts, but we don't like where this is going.
This is not working.
Or you say, hey, it's a rough patch. It's only 10 starts in. We don't like where this is going, but we can fix this.
I think it's also, and real quick here to this, because we did have some Bills news as well.
Yes.
But I think it's also something, too, that we see just 10 starts. They've seen two full off seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're sitting there going, this is not
going
correctly.
They've seen two training camps. They see practice every single day.
Yep.
And it's all the off-season talks, too. Of obviously, these players, they do stuff in the off-season together.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm not saying that's a major factor, but if he's working out with, let's say, Michael Pittman, and Pittman's just going, what's going on with this guy?
Yeah,
and I don't know if that's the case, but you never know.
Yeah,
it's stuff that you're never going to see, or if you do see it, it's because the players are really sick of him,
mm-hmm.
and that's when you really lose the locker room, and you got to move on.
It's tough.
Yeah, and it's tough being in that situation because you have to make the decision one way or another, and it's one of those now if you get rid of him. And he immediately has success, then you look like a fool. But if you move on and get a better quarterback, then, hey, it's a win-win situation.
And all this being said, the Bills are just about 4 or 4.5-point favorite,
right,
depending on who
right.
you ask, as they go into Indianapolis for Sunday at 1 o'clock. On to the Bills news, though. We will hear from our own Sal Capaccio here in just under 10 minutes. But the Bills have made it official. They're signing two defensive tackles.
Oh.
Ultimately, it was right. It is Jordan Phillips and it is Quentin Jefferson, both 2 1-year contracts, both coming back to Buffalo. Great to hear for them. The Phillips one, we were talking about it earlier. It didn't seem like they were definitely going to do it. Now they have. And then Quentin Jefferson was reported a little over an hour ago. So they bring in two new faces. I think that's a lot to do with just the injuries they've dealt with on the defensive line. But we'll get more on that as Sal Capaccio joins the show coming up next. And we will also attempt to carry live Bills head coach Sean McDermott, who's speaking at 11:45 this morning, looking for some more injury updates on that as well. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We got to be quick here, so we're going to get right to it. We go back to the Wester Hotline as our own Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, good morning. How are we doing today?
Pretty good, guys. Yeah, a little change up down here at One Bills Drive. Normally a noon press conference for Sean McDermott, 12:30 practice. Today, it'll be an 11:45 a.m. press conference for Sean McDermott. And the team will then have a walkthrough. No media allowed at the walkthrough, but then we'll hear from players after practice.
And then the Bills did announce today, just about a half hour ago, they're bringing in both defensive tackles. There was some rumors yesterday due to an Instagram post, but they bring in both Jordan Phillips. And then this morning it was reported and now confirmed as well, Quentin Jefferson, both coming back, both a reunion for the Bills.
Yeah, Jordan Phillips obviously had been with the Dallas Cowboys. Quentin Jefferson had been with the Cleveland Browns. I believe that's correct. Those two teams, their last two teams. I don't think they went anywhere else since. Either way, they're coming back to Buffalo, and they've been on the Bills, obviously, recently together. This has been a defensive line group. The Bills have, you know, kind of always looked around for guys that have been fits in scheme that they know, and these two guys certainly know Sean McDermott's scheme and Bobby Babich and what they're running. And let's face it, the Bills lack in stopping the run right now. And on top of that, no Dwayne Carter for at least two more games, no Dewan Smoot for at least four games. So they had to do something here. And, you know, you could trade, try and give up assets for something. Whether a trade was out there to be made, I'm not sure. But that would have to be giving up assets. But in this case, you pick up players who are, you know, street free agents who've been released, and they can come in here and the Bills hope can help. But I also find it interesting they did sign them right to the active roster. They did have the two spots open. They signed them right to the active roster. These are not practice squad signings. They go right on the 53.
Sal, I was looking at these two signings, and I think it's kind of interesting. Do you think that this was their plan all along, or do you think that there was just some trades that didn't materialize yesterday? Like, obviously, Za'Darius Smith gets traded early on in the day. If that was one of the targets, I mean, that kind of eliminates any idea pretty early on in the morning.
It's tough to say. I think because, Josh, you obviously have to give up assets. You know, I would say that, as Brandon Bean always does, I'm sure he was working the phones, seeing who's available, right? But when a team says, hey, you need a fifth-round pick or sixth-round pick, he's already given up some draft capital next year. He doesn't want to do that. And, you know, for the Bills, you can bring in somebody or two people in this case that know your scheme, know your fit. You don't have to onboard them quickly. You know, instead of giving up draft capital, that makes sense. On top of the fact, guys, let's remember, you know, salary cap matters, right? So I know teams can take on salary on trades, but the Bills don't have a lot of cap money. These would obviously be, you know, minimum types of deals. And now you're talking, what, maybe 500 grand the rest of the year, whatever that would add up to. So, you know, they have to play that game as well. You know, this is a circumstance they had to go do something, though. Obviously, I don't think it would be the plan necessarily a couple of weeks ago when you have everybody healthy. But now that you have Dewan Carter and Dewan Smoot down, it's something that the Bills, you know, had to go and do.
Zach Capaccio here on the Wester Hotline. Just for a few more minutes as we're getting ready for Bills head coach Sean McDermott to speak in just about 10 minutes ahead of today's practice. Sal, we didn't get much of an injury update earlier this week on Monday following this weekend's game. Keon Coleman kind of seeming like the big storyline there if he's going to be healthy. I do wonder, though, if them maybe not making a move at wide receiver, whether it be trade or free agent signings, is just on the defensive line. Maybe fool's hope, but maybe hoping that, you know, ultimately he's going to be okay. But I will tell you, I was a little alarmed by just the quote-unquote more testing that never really sits right with me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know how to really take this, and we're going to find out here in a few minutes, you know, at least a little bit from Sean McDermott, what Keon Coleman's status is. It didn't look good in the locker room. He had a brace on his left hand wrist area. Sean said it's a wrist hand area injury. More tests are being done. I agree with you that, hey, if you want to read into roster management, the two guys they added are two defensive tackles. They did not add, or two defensive linemen. They did not add a wide receiver at the trade deadline. They did not add a wide receiver today that we know of, because these two guys make it 53. Now, so that would be, okay, that's encouraging. They didn't go out and add to the position. However, let's remember, they have four guys on the practice squad, and all of them have elevations remaining. And they could say very easily, like they did last week with Amari Cooper being down, hey, we're going to elevate Jalen Virgil or Tyrell Shavers. But for me, it would be more of, is Keon Coleman going on injured reserve? Even if he's, you know, if Sean McDermott comes out today, guys, and goes, yeah, he's going to miss this week, he's going to be out week to week. If they don't put him on IR, that's obviously encouraging. And that would mean that, you know, because that would mean he'd immediately miss four games. If they don't do that, that means there's hope that he wouldn't have to be out the required four games. So we'll find out here in just about 10 minutes.
Sal, looking around the rest of the league yesterday with the trade deadline, not a lot of big moves in terms of AFC players, but in the NFC, there was a couple big splash moves with Lattimore going to the Commanders. I mean, what's your overall take on the rest of the league from yesterday?
Yeah, it's a great move for them. They're really bolstering up. That's a good team, and they're going to have a look at it here. And then, of course, the Lions. I mean, you could be looking at Lions Commanders, you know, NFC Championship game. They seem to be the two best teams in the conference right now, the way they're playing. Go back many years ago. That was that did happen. The Bills played the then Redskins in the Super Bowl. The Redskins actually beat the Lions to get to that Super Bowl. They played in the conference championship, I believe, or at least the division. But they used to play playoff games, those teams. That's how good they were together. Now back here we are again. I like the move for both teams. Adarius Smith going to Detroit. He's a really good edge rusher. Puts a lot of pressure on. They do not have Aiden Hutchinson. They could get Aiden Hutchinson back maybe in January during the playoffs. You know, so we'll see. That would be incredible if they did. And as far as the AFC is concerned, obviously the big name would be maybe Tre'Davious White. But I just did a radio hit in a Baltimore radio station, and I said, look, we love Tre'Davious here, but I just think that, you know, it's a lot to ask for him to, you know, be anything close to what he was. And he was a healthy scratch on a defense that is 30th in the league in yards per play allowed against the pass. So I think that says a lot there. But obviously big additions in Washington and Detroit.
I'd even say real quick here on Trey White, I mean, the draft compensation to go get him, 2 seventh-round picks, one of which being, I think, in 2027, it's usually not a great sign. Sal, we'll let you go here and get ready for Sean McDermott, and then we'll, you know, take a time out here in just a second so we can listen to all that. Thank you so much for this morning.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. But Washington and Detroit being good is so cool.
I love it.
It's kind of cool. Like, Washington gets rid of their bad owner and immediately are fun. Like, all right, cool. Let's go.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Awesome for them. Ross Tucker was on yesterday with Shelton Bulldog, and he even brought that up too, of like just an interest to Crick as well, because she lives in that area. You're seeing, you know, Terry McLaurin jerseys everywhere. You're seeing Jane Daniels jerseys everywhere. You're just now hoping, if you're their fans, not another RG3, where it's a right. Terrible injury rookie year and all of it, you know, falls apart. But with the new ownership, you're probably going to get a new stadium. I want to be, you know, correct here when I say this, but probably within the next 10 years, I would imagine. I mean, it's a garbage stadium. I mean, everyone hates it. But good for them. I just cannot imagine Detroit and Washington playing in like important playoff games. Because most of my life, Washington's been bad, and most of everyone's lives, Detroit has been bad. I mean, unless you're in the 40s with Bobby Lane. I mean, that's about it. Yeah, about that. I will say, though, the Marshawn Lattimore thing. One of the best rivalries in all of sports is done and over with. Mike Evans versus Marshawn Lattimore. Evans gets hurt and Lattimore leaves the NFC South. I mean, that's worthy of a candleside vigil.
The only thing we can hope for is that Mike Evans comes back in the playoffs and the Commanders and Buccaneers play each other.
We can only be so lucky. That would be amazing.
That would be insane. Like, Evans' first game back is against Lattimore and the Commanders.
Oh. Peak television. Yeah. 803-0550 is the number to call. We're going to break here so that we can hear the start of Bills head coach Sean McDermott's press conference with the media here today before practice. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Mint on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It's brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We are waiting for Bills head coach Sean McDermott to join with the media today before practice. We'll carry as much of that as we can, as, of course, we are waiting on injury updates to, namely, the likes of Keon Coleman. We were just speaking with Sal Capaccio there last segment. And Josh, that's kind of where I'm at as well. It's just like they added two defensive linemen. They didn't add a wide receiver.
They did.
I'm taking that as a positive vibe. Well, I mean, like, you know, from yesterday, depending on Keon's health.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, they did. They very much did.
So, like, I'm sitting here going, like, okay, I'm starting to feel a little bit better in terms of his health. But and Sal rightfully points out, well, they have some guys in the practice squad they could elevate. And it's just, oh, man, that's maybe the thing that has me holding my breath the most with these Bills, you know, even against a team like Indianapolis, who I think they will be fine against. Is we haven't really been able to see this wide receiver room fully healthy, fully operational, the whole thing. And in those brief moments that we did, they looked awesome. It looked like they completely opened up. Keon looked awesome, the whole thing. And, you know, Cooper was an immediate success. You're seeing how good Shakir is. And now we're back. It feels like we're going to be back to, well, you hope Cooper's wrist is okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're not getting anything out of Curtis Samuel. Khalil Shakir's really good, but, you know, you can't get him the ball 40 times a game. That's not going to happen. Even 20 feels like 20 targets feels insane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you like the running back room. Ray Davis has been great in the passing game, but you want to be able to see what these guys can be like just off to the races, fully healthy, especially during this little run here. And even, dude, look, just flat out, going against the Chiefs. They are gettable, but if you're going in as a wounded duck, which you're already going to be anyways, especially on the defensive side.
Do you think they will be at that point, the Chiefs? I mean, I wonder. Obviously,
the Chiefs are getting healthier.
That is true. I mean, obviously, Mahomes goes off with that ankle injury for like 5 minutes. He didn't even go off, really.
Mm-hmm.
But there was that fear. So I wonder if there's anything there that's going to be lingering. The fact that he came back, I don't think there will be. But, I mean, you never know what you're going to see throughout this week. They are technically on a short week, if you want to look at it that way.
Yep.
It was a Monday night game. But I just, man, I look at that game in week 11. And I'm not trying to just look past the Colts.
Because I don't play the game. I'll look past them. It's okay.
Okay. But I just look at that game, and it's got, I don't even know what's got written all over it, because I want to say it's got a Bills win written all over it, but
because that's what they do in the regular season. They beat the Chiefs.
But at the same time,
they just win games this year.
Yeah.
They just win games.
And
they don't look particularly good. Other Kansas teams City's all continue to make terrible, terrible decisions, like Todd Bowles not going for two.
Yeah, and Kansas City's got the Broncos this week, which if the Broncos would have held the Ravens to less than 41 points, I would have felt a little more confident. But after them showing what they did against the Ravens, I have no faith in the Broncos doing anything against the Chiefs.
No, because I was sitting there like I'm like, just, you know, keep it competitive, you know, the whole thing. Maybe you can do it
competitive
against,
for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, because then maybe you could do it against Kansas City too. And now I'm like, oh, never mind, never mind. This will be bad.
But,
and they were a team too that I was like, all right, they're being coached above their talent level. Maybe this will be a closer game. And
but
now I'm not there.
But after the Bills, the only real threat to the Chiefs is maybe the Texans.
Yeah, they can 100% go undefeated in the regular season.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not saying they're all of a sudden going to become like, you know, the 70s Dolphins or even the 2007 Patriots. But
yeah,
their schedule is shaping up for that. And then they are, in fact, getting healthier. Isaiah Pacheco is going to be coming back soon. Hollywood Brown, they might get in the playoffs, but you're going to get a healthier Juju Smith-Schuster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are getting somewhat healthier. It's just, it does feel like the Bills might be like the one team that could give them a loss.
But you're also going to find out as those players get healthy and as they start to come back, if that was really the problem with the offense. Because the offense itself has had problems all throughout the season. It's not just the the players getting hurt. The defense has bailed them out of most games.
Yeah, but I mean, even now, I mean, they didn't look great the other night, but you're starting to get Travis Kelce going. What do you have, 14 targets, 16 targets, and 12 catches? I mean, he's starting to get going as well. It's just, you sit there and you're looking at him and you're just like, yeah, I mean, here they go again. They don't look as good as they have in their prime years, but they didn't look that great the last 2 years, and they won two straight Super Bowls. I don't want to come down off like a Debbie Downer. I think the Bills have shown that they can be a very good team this year, and I would argue it is, well, the big three. It is Kansas City, Baltimore, Buffalo. But even then, it's just, you look at them and again, they figure out ways to win.
I really wish the Chiefs played the Lions in the regular season. I want it so bad.
Yeah, because I don't really want to see that as a Super Bowl.
I don't know if
I
think the Lions could handle them in a Super Bowl.
Oh, I think they definitely could.
But
I want to know what that Super Bowl would have been like if they held on against San Francisco.
Ooh.
And Detroit actually goes into the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I think Detroit the last 2 years is the best team in football for like the latter half of last season and then into this season. I think they're the best team in football. Even though their record has not shown.
Are they Super Bowl favorites? It's probably the Chiefs.
No, I don't think they're Super Bowl favorites.
Really?
I don't
like,
think
not
so.
Even close? I feel like the Lions have earned it, I think. They've definitely...
No, I don't think they're the favorite. I do think they are two or three.
Okay.
Yeah, they're two, plus 450. Kansas City's plus 400.
Okay, so it's pretty close.
Buffalo's plus 800, Baltimore's plus 600.
So...
This is just, I'm going off Fox Sports.
Wait, Buffalo's right behind Detroit?
Buffalo is right behind Baltimore. So
oh,
goes
sorry,
Kansas City,
sorry.
Detroit, Baltimore, Buffalo.
The way you read that, like...
Yeah, I was jumping around there. But yeah, I mean, Detroit should be there. Look, if you're a Detroit Lions fan, you've got to feel incredible. about what's going on.
Especially even, and obviously the Aiden Hutchinson injury is bad.
And, I'm glad Sal brought that up too. Dan Campbell has not closed the door yet on that possibility that he's going to come back this season. I mean, that would be phenomenal for them. I mean, we talk about it with Matt Milano. It'd be great for the Bills as well if they can get Matt Milano. But if you're sitting there as a Detroit fan, and let's say the NFC divisional game, and all of a sudden it's like, hey, you know, Aiden Hutchinson's been ramping up his practice schedule. Mm-hmm. Now he's ready to go, and you've got Za'Darius Smith, you know, on the other side with him. And you look at the rest of the NFC. That's the big part for me. You look at the rest of the NFC, and it just it does feel like, yeah, sure, it'll be Detroit Washington. I don't think Washington's
Detroit,
there yet.
Detroit Washington NFC Championship game. How do you feel about that?
I think that's more my thing. Is it just? I think they're going to walk all over Washington. I think Detroit is just a overall better version. They've been building towards this.
Well, I just mean more so, could that be the matchup?
Oh, yeah, yeah, 100%. I think that could be the matchup.
Because I think that the path would probably be Detroit would probably take out San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you would have Washington just run through their side of the bracket.
I could see it. I could see it. Because, I mean, yeah, again, you look at the rest of the NFC, no one's really giving you a ton of confidence outside of those two.
Right.
The NFC West leader is Arizona at 5-4. Rams, though, are making a push. They could be a
scary
team.
They really
are.
They've kind of turned that around.
They could be a frightening team in an NFC playoffs. Yeah. And then, I mean, Atlanta's kind of cool. I wouldn't say, though, they're outright, like, the favorites.
But if you look at every other team on that side of the NFL, Washington and Detroit can run through all of them, no problem. The only one that I could see giving either of them problems if they figure themselves out is the Eagles. And obviously San Francisco. But San Francisco's they also have to get healthy.
Chris McCaffrey might be playing this weekend.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, Philadelphia, though, I think most of us now comfortably kind of consider, like, your coach is going to hold you back.
Yeah. Sirianni is just the biggest issue in that franchise.
Mm-hmm. Even this past weekend.
What if Shane Steichen was still there?
You look at Philadelphia, though, they are based a lot on their coordinators.
Because
even when you look at Doug Peterson, like I joke and say that he's just Mike McCarthy with better PR. I do partially mean that, though, because
there's somehow a reason that he's still employed in Jacksonville.
But like I do partially mean that because like when they had Frank Reich as their OC, they were awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then he left, and then the Doug Peterson wart started to show, and then it was over.
Yeah,
Shane Steichen, you were like, Nick Sirianni, you were sitting there going, okay. He's a young coach. He's building. I kind of like the energy.
Yeah.
And he's got really good coordinators in Shane Steichen and Jonathan Gannon.
He's got that trash talk to him.
Yeah. So like, there was something Philly about him that he kind of liked. And then Shane Steichen leaves. And the Colts were really good last year with Gardner Minshew. It's been a bad year this year, but I think it's a lot of internal stuff that's just firing on all cylinders in a negative way. And then the Eagles. I say it all the time. We talk about it off air. I think the Eagles are one of the most talented teams in football. I also think they're one of the worst coached teams in football, namely from the head coaching position. You look at them now. I mean, what are they, 6-2? They're 6-2. I mean, they can catch Washington, absolutely. And yet, I imagine their coach will burn them at the end of the season. That music does, of course, signal. We ran out of time. Unable to get to head coach Sean McDermott with his press conference, though South Patch, of course, will be covering it. You can see that on Twitter. And, of course, coming up later on when One Bills Live gets on the air at about 1 o'clock. But coming up next, after a quick timeout here, Sabres Live. They'll help you break down yesterday's 5-1 Sabres win over the Ottawa Senators. This is WGR.